This is HPR episode 2130 entitled, Git Push to Two Repositories at Once. It is hosted by Klaatu and is about 24 minutes long. The summary is, Klaatu demonstrates how to perform one Git push to two separate repositories.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by anhonesthost.com. Get 15% discount on all shared hosting with the offer code HPR15. That's HPR15. Better web hosting that's honest and fair at anhonesthost.com.
You're listening to Hacker Public Radio. My name is Klaatu, and on this episode, I wanted to talk about Git push. Specifically, Git pushing to two separate repositories at the same time. This is a little bit of a niche issue, I guess. And specifically for me, I only have had to deal with it because some people out there wanted access to some of my code, but they couldn't be bothered to go to GitLab to go get it. Most of my public Git repositories that I host publicly are located on GitLab. They used to be located on Gitorious, but Gitorious.org went away, sort of dissolved. It just kind of evaporated. And as part of their sort of parting farewell, they told everyone, hey, you should go to GitLab.com and put your stuff there instead. And since GitLab.com had built a little importer where you just put in your Gitorious.org URL and click a button and it just imports everything for you, that was just kind of like the obvious and easy route. So I went to GitLab.com. In addition, GitLab.com was the only sort of major sort of public kind of obvious choice that was open source from top to bottom. Now GitLab has a non-open source version. They're one of those sort of open core companies or whatever, where they, you know, most of what they offer is open source in the community edition. And then there's like the paid for edition where they give you a couple of fancier features. And I think most of their fancy features specifically are for continuous integration. I could be wrong. That might have even made it into the community edition at this point. But it's not really that big of a deal. And I'm not sure how well that's even working for them. I mean, not that they're not doing well. They seem to be doing quite well. And in fact, I used GitLab extensively at a job. So that's kind of how I got used to like their interface and the whole concept of doing Git through a web interface, which is annoying. But it is something that a lot of people do seem to like for whatever reason. So yeah, they seem to be doing well. And in a funny story, at one job that I had, they were actually trying to pay GitLab for something that wasn't on sort of the price list that the salespeople at GitLab had on their, you know, computer screen. And they literally turned down thousands of dollars because they were like, we don't have that, you know, that's not on the menu. And then so we ended up using the open source, the community edition of GitLab, because they wouldn't take our money. It was really bizarre. One of those sort of eternal questions of how you connect the people who need to get rid of some money with the people who claim to want the money. You know, it's like, sometimes the weirdest things kind of like stand in the way. I mean, sure, sometimes you just don't know they exist, or sometimes it would take too much to connect those two dots. But in other cases, it's just like this McDonald's employee can't find the right button on their cash register, and so I can't give my money to this place. And it's just bizarre that that happens. And I wonder how much that affects businesses in real life, because certainly like with GitLab, that was a real thing that I witnessed myself. I wonder if that happens elsewhere. I mean, sometimes I think people don't know that there's an option. Like I don't know. I wonder how many people would pay $60 for Red Hat Enterprise Linux, for instance, if they knew that there was a $60 option available. Like, I don't know, but certainly when I discovered that there was a $60 option, which was like, quote, self-support, but, you know, you get access to the Red Hat network and to their online support and stuff like that. So it's a license. So if you have to have a license because of your boss or because of whatever, then you can get one for $60. But a lot of people don't even know that's an option. And they're like, oh, Red Hat's like $800. It's kind of interesting. It's a weird problem to have. And none of it has anything to do with Git. I'm sorry, I got distracted. So anyway, GitLab, yeah, was open source. It was kind of the obvious choice to go to from GitTorius. So I did that. And when I say obvious choice, I mean it's the obvious choice that is not self-hosting. Self-hosting was the obvious choice, but I do want the code to sort of be able to be found. So I'm trying to leverage a public server. And GitLab was just, it was more open than GitHub, so that's kind of why I defaulted to it. Now, GitHub's big advantage, their primary sort of the thing that they really truly deliver is in the form of, like, if you go to any given GitHub repository, you'll see that in the right-hand corner of the repository page, there's a green button that says download or clone. And that's their killer feature, apparently, because people go to your GitHub page looking for code or whatever, and they see the big green button that says clone or download. And believe it or not, that's a big deal. Now, admittedly, on GitLab, their download button is puzzlingly obscured. I mean, it's not super hard to find, but like when you go there, especially if you are used to seeing a GitHub repository interface, when you go there, like when you look for the download button, it's actually pretty hard to find. It's not labeled with text. It's just an icon, and the icon is white on white, and it is in the right place, like upper right hand corner, sort of. I mean, like that I guess it is sort of a logical place, but it's next to other buttons that you don't know what they mean, and yeah, it's harder to find. So I'm not really sure why they do it that way, but people really love this this green button that GitHub has. And so when people have asked to Git code, and I've directed them to GitLab, they seem to get really turned off by that. They're like, GitLab? Oh no, not GitLab. That's for, you know, that's for the geeks or people who know Git, I guess. It's just like, really? It's not that hard. But yeah, so what happens is that sometimes I will take a repository that is hosted primarily on GitLab and then mirror it on GitHub so that people can still find the code on GitHub. Isn't that nice of me? In practice, what that meant for a while was that I was Git pushing to two separate places. So Git push origin head and then Git push GitHub head. And origin would resolve to GitLab, because that's kind of like the default label for your initial repository. And then GitHub would be the one that I made manually to push to. And that was working, and it kind of kept them separate, and it was a two-step process, and it was okay. It wasn't necessarily perfect. So I started to think, well, how can I make this all just sort of happen at once? Because it is a mirror, so I don't want to have to think about it. I just want to be able to Git push to my primary repository and then have everything ripple through to the mirror network, as it were. The way that it eventually, or that it initially came to me, was to do it with a Git hook. So Git hooks are scripts that you can write and kind of manage, usually locally, in each repository. And it's an auto run script, you know, so it detects when you do some action, like a commit or a push, and then it does some action based on what you've done. So there might be a pre-commit, a post-commit, a post-push, things like that. So I figured, well, I could write a git hook to detect when I've pushed something, and then once that push is complete, it can then kick off a script to push the same thing to my GitHub repository, my GitHub mirror. And that was kind of an idea, but I did a little bit more research, and it turns out that it doesn't even have to be that difficult. It can be even simpler. And that is, you can just add another push destination to your git config. That seems obvious, and in fact, that is already what I did. But what you can do is take your existing origin destination and add another destination to it. Now, I'm not saying to do this, because this is actually not what I chose to do. There's a variation on this that I think is a little bit better. But I mean, you could do it. You can do if you do a git remote dash v in a git repository, you'll see the remote locations of your kind of your decentralized git network. And by default, typically you're going to see, like, if you're just kind of like Joe user and you're just kind of doing the default git stuff, then you're going to see two entries. Both of them are going to get the label origin, and there'll be something like, let's say, git at gitlab.com blah 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 fetch, and origin git at gitlab.com blah 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 push. So the fetch one is obviously where you're pulling your updates from, and the push is the place where you're pushing your changes to. They are very frequently the same address, because you're working on the same, from the same sort of origin point, although they're not necessarily always the same. And you can add to these, though. You don't only have to have two entries. So the way that you would add, and again, I'm not saying to do this, I'm just saying that this is what you could do. You can do a git remote set dash URL dash dash add dash dash push origin git at github.com blah blah blah. So what that does is it's saying, I want you to take, I want you to execute a git remote command. So git remote, and then the subcommand that we're doing is a set dash URL. And we are specifying this as an add action. We're not removing, we're adding. So dash dash add. And then we're specifying this as a push destination rather than like a fetch point. So dash dash push. And then we're labeling it as a member of the origin group. So that's why we're doing git remote set dash URL dash dash add dash dash push origin. And then the location of our server, git at github.com, blah, blah, blah. And then when you do a git push origin head, you are no longer just pushing to your GitLab repository. You are also pushing to your GitHub repository. Now, there are two caveats about this. I'll save the second caveat for later because it's pretty universal. But one thing to be aware of is that this obviously lumps everything into the same group. So if you would ever see an occasion where you would want to push to one and not the other, this would make it, essentially impossible. You'd have to remove one of them in order to push, So what I'm saying is that this does not keep it very modular. This is now creating, this is sort of cramming two different things into one group and treating them basically as the same, which might be what you want to do. It just doesn't feel right to me. It feels like I'm taking two separate places and sticking the same label on them just for convenience. So there's another way to do this, a better way to do this, and that is to create a new group entirely. So the first thing that you would want to do is create a new group. So as I say, the default group location is origin. That's what it's called. That's not a magic word or anything. That just happens to be the thing that the Git programmers, the Git devs chose you know, as your default string when you're creating a repository, the place where you're pushing to and fetching from gets labeled origin. A lot of us tend to forget that that's just a generic name. We could rename that. We could call it anything. We could call it foo. We could call it penguin. Doesn't really matter. It gets called origin as a default. For clarity, I think I would probably add a new group first called like GitHub. And you would do that the same way as you do, you know, what we just did, like, well, not exactly the same. So it would be git remote, and then you'd say add GitHub, and then git at github.com/:// And that would create the group and instantiate that group's sort of URL destination as the GitHub address. So now if you do a git remote dash v, you'll see that there's an origin entry and the GitHub entry. So now you've got two places, and that's what I've been flying with for a long time, where I would do a git push origin head, wait for that to complete, and then git push GitHub head, and then wait for that to complete. It's a two-step process, but at least you've got two separate locations, and they're distinct, and they're kind of self-standing, and that works. Here's how to make that better. Make a third group that will then encompass both. So you do a git remote add all git at gitlab.com/. So that instantiates the group with your default sort of GitLab address, and it labels it all. And then you need to add both addresses as your push destination. So git remote set dash URL dash dash add dash dash push all git at gitlab.com:// And then git remote set URL set dash URL dash dash add dash dash push all git at github.com:// So now if you do a git remote dash v, you should see that you've got three entries, or three blocks, I should say. You should have your origin block, which is just your GitLab, your GitHub block, which is just your GitHub, and then your all block, which happens to have both your GitHub and your GitLab addresses as its push destination. So now if you do a git push all head, then you're pushing your changes to both your GitLab repository and your GitHub repository all in one go, but you maintain the sort of distinction between origin and GitHub and whatever else. So that's my preferred method. I think it's the cleaner method. You know, it's the more sort of self-documenting method. You kind of see what's going on. And I think it's also more appropriate. I mean, it's not, but I feel like it is, because I don't see the logic, I guess, in having two push entries in your sort of origin. Even though there's nothing special about origin, and technically speaking, you certainly can have two push and destinations, it doesn't really matter. I just happen to find that this is a little bit cleaner. Now, the big universal caveat to all of this is that if you're using SSH config to manage your, or to help you manage your SSH keys for access into your Git repositories, then this method could fail because of that. So I did an episode on Hacker Public Radio about .ssh/config. It's a config file that you can have in your .ssh file, and you can select, you know, you can define certain defaults on a per host level. So you can list a host like by name, you know, like GitHub. And then whenever you push to GitHub, you could say, GitHub is a bad example. So let's say foo. So whenever you push to foo, set the port to 2222 instead of 22. Set the identity file to .ssh, to /foo_id_foo. And set the username to not clat2 instead of clat2. something like that. And you can do that per host. It's a very simple config file. It's changed my life. I use it for everything. And I use it including GitHub and GitLab. And I have different SSH keys on GitHub as I do on GitLab. So when I tried this method where I was pushing to both GitHub and GitLab all in one go, I kind of assumed that since they necessarily had to be two separate SSH commands running, I assumed that my SSH config file would be parsed twice. But apparently Git doesn't do that, because the second push kept failing. I couldn't get, you know, like GitLab would succeed and then GitHub would fail. And the only thing that I could figure out was that my SSH config was not getting looked at twice. And what was happening was that the first one that was getting pushed, and I don't know how it's deciding that. I don't know if it's doing it in the order that I provided or if it's alphabetical. Let's just arbitrarily say it was GitLab. So the first one that was being pushed succeeded, and then the second one was failing because of SSH validation. So what I ended up having to do was create a third SSH key, or I chose to create a third SSH key, and I set the SSH key for both GitLab and GitHub and used that identity file as my authentication, so that when I did a Git push, I was using, you know, whether it was going to GitHub or GitLab, it was essentially, it was using the same SSH key, and it was getting in under either condition. I don't know if that's like, I don't know if that's by design. I don't know if it's just an oversight. Maybe it's just something that I'm not thinking of, that I screwed up in my config in the first place. I'm not sure, but it does. It's something to be aware of. So like, if you try this and it's not working, it might be because of SSH config. Now, if you're not pushing via SSH, then obviously that's not going to matter one way or the other. But more often than not, you're pushing via SSH. Like, let's be honest, you're probably pushing via SSH. I mean, even internally at work, I push to the local Git servers via SSH. You know, it's just like, yes, there are other protocols that can write to Git, but no one uses it. So you're probably using SSH. And if you are, you do have to just kind of keep in mind that your SSH key may not apply to one repository, or, you know, you might be using different keys for each repository, whatever. Keep that in mind. And if when you try this, it fails, take a look at what SSH key you're attempting to use for each login and sort it out that way. Because Git, like I say, if you're using Git with the at symbol in your URL, you're using SSH. So anything that it's doing is subject to a .ssh config parse at least once, apparently not twice. So that's something to be aware of and to leverage, because it's actually useful, but you just have to know that it's happening. I think that's it for me. Hopefully that helped. It's probably not something that you'll use every day, but certainly if you feel the need to mirror a Git repository, and you want it to be fairly invisible to you, this is a great way to do it. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club, and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.